All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire Football Podcast. Week 5 preview. We got conference play, a couple bye weeks. You know what to do. Go to mwwire.com to check out everything we do or listen to us. Matt Kennelly is hanging out. I'm Jeremy Moss here. And we only have one Friday night game, Matt, and then only 5 on Saturday. It's like a light week for us. No more 10 to 12 games.
Yeah, it seems like that was kind of the common complaint for pretty much all of college football. People were like, Virginia, Notre Dame, ugh, you know. But there's plenty of intrigue for us Mountain West football fans, so I think we're going to be all set.
No, we're good. We got the driver's seat for the P5, New Year's 6 game coming up, maybe. Hopefully, cross fingers. Yeah. Hey, Boise can't lose this week. They're off, so there's that.
That's true.
You can never lose. Well, can't say you can never lose, but you're probably not losing on the bye week. You're not losing the official loss column. And what are they sitting at, 15? Is that where they're at the moment?
Yes, they are.
Let me ask you a stupid question. Can they make the top 10 by the end of the year?
If teams ahead of them keep losing, I don't see why not.
Not just by their own virtue merit of winning?
Well, see, and this was something that I talked about on Twitter, at MWCWire, by the way. I think it was about a week or two ago at this point, because somebody UCF related was talking about how the schedule didn't really allow for that kind of climb.
And for Boise or for anybody?
For anybody in the group of five.
Okay.
And so I was just curious, and I don't remember the exact deep dive that I did, but if you just go by SP Plus, you know, as of last week, I think it was at least. Both of those teams still had two top 50 opponents left on their schedule. And, you know, obviously Boise beat Air Force. And last I checked, I think they were ranked in the 60s. And I know that there was some adjustments as the preseason projections have begun to get phased out. But nothing says that the Falcons or other teams can't play their way into that territory. And if they get to the championship game, there's a pretty good chance they're going to face another top 50 team. And, you know, if San Diego State or Fresno State make it that far, that seems to be the most likely scenario, because, you know, the other teams that are ostensibly contenders are, you know, the advanced numbers don't necessarily think very fond of them. But I don't think it was necessarily a foregone conclusion that there was no mobility to be had whatsoever. But I think it's just important to remember that no game exists in a vacuum. So, yeah, Boise's going to have to keep winning. And, by the way, I'm sure we'll bring it up as the weeks continue, but FEI, for instance, right now, gives them a 23% chance of winning out.
Which what is that rank overall? Is that pretty happy?
I think it was, like, Clemson, among the undefeated Alabama, teams maybe? That were left, I think it was, like, fifth overall.
So I'm guessing behind Clemson, Alabama,
So yeah, I don't remember the exact list.
I know Clemson's like number one because ACC is garbage. So, So what do you think? So, I think it's possible. I think it's both. Obviously, teams are going to lose because the SEC has what, three teams in the top 10. They're going to play each other, beat each other up. There's teams that evidently are going to lose at some point, like Wisconsin, Ohio State. I think they play this year at some point. I think they do. But if not, there's teams that play that are just knocking each other around. Maybe teams behind Boise will move up. I don't see too many teams jumping them unless it's like, say, USC beats Washington or something. Washington beats Oregon or one of those type of things.
Yeah. But
they're fine. Like, if they make top 10, it's not a big deal. The only thing that – and here's the thing, too. Like, if they're right where they're at now, they're in position for that New Year's 6 game. There's no way for them to make it as any sort of at-large. Like, just say – there's not even a point in talking in that conversation, like, making it at-large if they don't win the conference, because it'd be, like, five, because the only open spot's at Cotton Bowl. Mm-hmm. But they can get high. It's like, right now, it doesn't really matter. If you're a Boise fan, yes, you want your team to win. You want to go higher. But just win. All you got to do is take care of your own stuff, and you're fine. There's no – it's great to be top 10, 8, 7, 6, whatever, but who cares? You can be 15 the rest of the year and still make a big bowl game and be fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, I guess we need to get to the bad news for Boise State. I guess they get bad luck occasionally. They lose a pretty big injury. Leading tackler to the season is gone.
Ezekiel Noah, done for the year.
That's they have other players, but that's still a big loss. Anytime, especially at this level, like group of five, even though Boise recruits so well, Matt, if you get your twos or threes, you're going to start seeing some issues and gaps and cracks wide and open when you have to have guys who don't play more than they normally do.
I mean, maybe, but we saw them overcome, for the most part, these same kind of issues last year. And that's really the luxury of having recruited so well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Boise's particular instance, being able to replace them with a transfer guy like Kafari Buffalo, or, you know, slide someone over like Benton Wickersham, or just to plug someone else in there in a way that a lot of other teams in the Mountain West can't. So obviously it's one of those things where at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
it starts to add up. But in these early weeks, you know, they've already seen Ezra Cleveland miss time. They've seen John Ojukwu miss time. You know, DeAndre Pierce hasn't been healthy for the last 3 weeks, and they're still undefeated anyway.
Yeah.
You know, they're finding ways to win games, which is, you know, what good teams do, is what disciplined and talented teams do. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily think it's like a game changer, which is no knock on Noah because he's been extremely productive. It's just that there's a very good chance that they'll plug someone else in. And if he's like 90% of what Noah's been able to do, then they probably won't miss a beat on that side of the ball.
Pretty much, yeah. They've lost, they said, two of the last couple of years, lost leading tacklers. But Matt, we missed the big news. How did we not start with this?
Oh, that's right.
Schedule.
I almost forgot about it for a moment.
Whoa. Okay. UCF.
Well, it was yesterday's news. We're recording on Wednesday, and this broke on Tuesday. That's why.
And to be fair, we've known for like months this is going to happen too. So, but Boise State, UCF, home and home, 2021-2023. I like your tweet. In 5 years, I'll hang a participant trophy banner playing on the blue turf.
Right.
It's like, who did it? Did the somebody pro sports, I think. Or no, you know, the Colts.
It was the Indianapolis Colts, wild card participant or something like, or AFC championship participant. Yeah, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one of I think it's AFC title game participant. When Andrew Luck retired, they brought that up. I was like, that's still kind of weird. They got that game. You know what's nice about the game? 2021, Hank Bachmeier will be around playing quarterback.
That's sure he'll be a junior by then, right?
That's right. So he cannot leave unless somehow the NFL changes the rules in like next year, which is not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
No, it's probably never going to happen. But it's a good matchup. And Raj, I made an article on this, but buddy Raj, since on the bye week, he's doing all sorts of other stuff for the sites, just bye week, off-season stuff. He went through their schedule through like 2030. Do you see who they play?
Who, Boise?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like we've seen, like we mentioned before, they got Michigan State, they got Florida State. And also, Florida State, if they want to get out of that game, it's cost them $2 million now, just so you know,
mm-hmm.
since it's within a year. But they have, I'm trying to pull up his tweet now, but off the top of my head, they have Florida State, Michigan State, Oklahoma State. Extended the series with BYU. They have, who else they got? They have Washington State, right?
I believe so.
They got a ton. I think they're averaging over one P5 opponent per year. They have zero FCS teams during that time as well.
And that's historically how they have done things. Like this year's game against Portland State was more the exception rather than the rule.
Exactly. But they're playing lots of good teams, so.
But I think it's important to keep in mind because, yeah, every time there's something like this, it's a big deal. It's good to focus on the one team that's being able to make these kinds of moves. But, you know, let's not forget they're not the only team in the conference that's really going to be challenging themselves in future seasons. Like we still know, for instance, that Fresno State has, you know, at least a couple more trips to USC.
You mean their Southern California residency?
Yeah, exactly. you know, and they got, you know, trips to UCLA, they got trips to Purdue at Arizona State. So, I mean, they're approaching it a little bit differently by taking on so many road games.
Yeah.
But, you know, take a team like San Diego State, for instance, you know, they've got a home and home against Wazoo in the near future. They've got, you know, UCLA coming to San Diego twice.
And they've had Stanford home and home.
Utah home and home.
Arizona State.
So there are other teams who are making these kinds of moves. Sure. So, you know, big time credit to Boise for being able to land this deal.
Just the latest move, I would say, of teams that scheduling up.
Yeah. And you know, maybe we'll see more seasons like we've seen so far in September.
Yeah, that's part of it, too. You get all this attention. And look who, like, San Jose State, Colorado State, Arkansas. Like, we saw all the games, Nevada, Purdue, Nevada, Northwestern, Nevada, Vanderbilt, Nevada, Wake Forest. Like, Utah State, Wake Forest.
Yeah.
A lot of these games. So it's just the latest in line. It's just this UCF matchup. It's like maybe finally something. There'll be a, I don't know, just hopefully it's a good game, right?
No, they'll have to be good in 2 years.
It would just be unfortunate if UCF goes back to 0-12 again or something.
That would be hilarious. What are you talking about?
It's trying to be nice here.
This is the Mountain West Wire podcast. This is the dunk on UCF every chance you get Wire podcast.
All right. So, yeah, don't lose to Pitt, I guess.
Right
to the terrible ACC, but no, it's a good matchup. Hopefully, like we want it, it's more fun if it's good teams. You know what I mean? And maybe it'll be one of the openers. Maybe somebody's like, oh, the game deal will be there. Who knows? They'll probably, odds of it being no, because there's going to be one of these games in Arlington at the Mercedes-Benz. You know what I mean? We're at the Chick-fil-A or the Camping World thing that'll be more high profile than this game, just because it's two of the pretty good teams that are top 25 the past couple years, and Boise beyond that, farther going back further in time. But it's, I doubt that happened. It'd be cool if it would, but it's a good matchup to have. It's better than playing, like, there's been some bad schedules on some of these teams that play, like, across the country. Like, I'm a University of Utah guy. Yeah, they got Florida the other day for home and home. Except Brandon will make a bet in a couple years. Mm-hmm. But instead of getting rid of, like, Montana State or Idaho State, they're punting BYU down the road for a couple more years. I'm like, why can't you play them all? Like, I get it, but just FCS games are the worst. But
yeah, it happens.
Just saying. I'm not a fan of it, so... All right, let's get to some other news. We had San Diego State in a bye week. You mentioned they have a key receiver or a receiver out.
Yeah, Elijah Koth has a broken hand. So it's not to say that he is out permanently.
For a while.
But it's very hard to catch passes with a broken hand. So yeah. I think the expectation is that he'll still be able to contribute on special teams and things like that. But, you know, with the way that the Aztecs offense has been progressing, especially with Ryan Agnew under center, you know, it's a little tricky to keep losing pieces like that, especially since Juwan Washington still isn't 100% either. So I don't want to cast too much doubt about the direction that the team is trending, but that's just something to keep an eye on. And according to Kirk Kenny of the San Diego Union Tribune, maybe their fullback Isaac Lester will be back sooner rather than later. Still TBD, but I guess he's making good progress.
Wow, that's they gotta get guys healthy. Like, they haven't had Juwan Washington for a while either. So,
I'm not gonna lie, I'm very interested to see how a fullback can be integrated into that offense.
Yeah, with him being mostly shotgun, and it could, I don't see why it'd be too much of a difference. Like, look what New Mexico used to do, or look what sometimes Air Force goes in shotgun. It's
I honestly wonder if they're just gonna watch a lot of New England Patriots tip film to figure out what they do with James Devlin.
I guess that'd be a good idea as well. But if you're in shotgun, a fullback, I guess. I don't know. You can put him in motion before they hand the ball off. There's a running start almost for a block.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just get healthy. That's what they're. I like this year, too, the way it plays out. I believe every single team has at least two bye weeks.
I think so, yeah.
And so, like, the way Boise, San Diego State, they're this week, and I think in 3 weeks they have another bye. So it's always fun because when it gets later in the year, it's injuries pile up, guys get tired, it's a long season. Having the extra week off could hopefully get better football later on. So hopefully these guys get healthy and get ready to go. But are we ready for game time? Friday Night Football?
Let's do it.
All right. Friday Night Football, as I just mentioned a second ago. San Jose State off their one of their biggest wins ever. Right? Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're even calling it themselves one of the biggest wins ever.
I know one win is not bigger than, but I'll be quiet about that.
Oh, come on. That was low.
Sorry, it's low-hanging fruit there. It's easy.
You didn't have to do that.
Hey, that was a whack back then, so I can do what I want, right?
Okay, fine. That's fair.
Are you surprised Air Force is almost a 3-touchdown favorite? Because that kind of surprised me a little bit.
I mean, yes, I don't know. I guess I could see the case both ways.
It's 19.5 at this moment as of Wednesday afternoon.
I mean, I can tell you this much. They're not going to pick off 5 passes again.
Air Force won't throw enough for that to happen.
And, you know, and maybe that's where we start talking about this game, because we both know that, obviously everybody knows, all of our listeners know that Air Force triple option team run heavy and everything like that. But I saw this very interesting stat on Twitter the other day, and I think it was Barrett Sally who threw it out, how there are 5 or 6 teams in college football that haven't given up a run play of more than 20 yards so far this year. And 2 of those teams are Air Force and San Jose State.
Interesting.
I thought it was, like, totally fascinating.
Yeah. For
and
sure.
So, you know, to me, where you start thinking about this game is, like, we know that San Jose State has a lot of talent up in their front 7. And we know that, you know, a guy like Ethan Aguayo can do a little bit of it all. But they're going to get tested by this Air Force running game in a way that they don't often get tested. Actually, so I found the tweet. It is Barrett Sally. The other 3 teams are Wisconsin, Iowa, and Troy.
Okay.
And so I think the name of the game is, how much are the Spartans going to be able to contain the Air Force running game, because we've seen them struggle with that in years past. And they were really successful at being able to hold Arkansas's running game in check for the most part, you know, to the effect that, you know, they were able to build an early lead, which forced Nick Starkle to throw and catch up. And so, you know, I'm thinking about what Donald Hammond was able to do in last week's game against Boise State. Like, we know that he can throw at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if San Jose State can put themselves in a position where they can get even like a 10-point lead and really force Air Force into doing things that they don't necessarily want to do. Overall, on a per-play basis, San Jose State's been a little bit better defending the run this year than they were last year. Last year, they were at 4.72 yards per carry allowed. This year, through three games, they're at 3.91. And Tulsa was really kind of the exception, which is where things really went sideways. They weren't able to contain the Golden Hurricanes running game.
And only three touchdowns all year allowed.
And so I think that
impressive.
You know, that's one of those big factors that's really going to change this game one way or the other is, can San Jose State defend the run? And if they can, how well is Donald Hammond going to respond if he has to throw the ball more often than they typically want to?
Well, I think so as well. It's just this... I just don't think, because Air Force's defense, I think, is good enough. Like, I don't think San Jose State has the offense to get out to that, even that 10-point lead you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they do, that's kind of the game plan if you play against Air Force. If you get up, say, 13, 14, 17 points, it's hard for them to come back just because the way their offense was, even with Hammond being able to throw a little bit better. Because look at the Boise State game. They got behind late in the game and couldn't catch up. Also, time, the game shrinks when there's fewer and fewer minutes left as the game goes on to score, do different things, but I just want to see if Josh Love or Tyler Nevin running the ball, or anybody who Love throws to, can get ahead that big. But then again, I don't see this being like a blowout. I could see Air Force winning fairly comfortably, but I don't see like Air Force winning like to have a 20-point spread essentially, 56 over under. It's like a 36-10 win. I don't know if Air Force would score 36 points.
See, I think the other game, or excuse me, the other element to this game that's going to turn this game one way or the other is, for the most part, Air Force has had a lot of success defending big plays in a way that they really struggled against in years past. So even though they've only faced 89 pass attempts so far, and they're tied with Boise, they've played one fewer game than Boise, but they have only given up six plays so far more than 20 yards. So that's something to keep an eye on, because we saw last week that Trey Walker, for instance, we grew accustomed to him being kind of a big play threat.
Mm-hmm.
But against Arkansas, he was really successful kind of playing the more of a possession type receiver. And it is perhaps worth noting that they've still given up 24 plays of at least 10 yards. So I think kind of defending those intermediate passes, or rather Josh Love's ability to complete those intermediate passes, you know, not only to Walker, but if Jaquan Blackwell can follow up his strong performance last week, that's going to be another element where, you know, even if San Jose State falls behind, you know, the passing game has shown that they can move the ball, and that will be something that they'll need, you know, if they get into a position where they need to rally in this game.
Well, I think what it'll come down to, it's pretty simple. I think it'll be the Air Force running game. Just because, do we try, like, I mean, look who San Jose State has played this year. They are doing much better in the running game. I'm not going to go out and be like, oh, but they've done this. They're much improved. The thing is, like, Tulsa and Arkansas ran fairly well. It's a little bit skewed because they played Northern Colorado. So It's a little bit skewed, I would say. However, Arkansas, they only gave up 131 yards. So it's pretty good. Tulsa, like you mentioned, it's 4.7, not great. This is going to be the toughest running attack they faced. And so I would expect, against any team, not just San Jose, that whatever your average was giving up, you're going to give up more than that. So I'd fully expect Air Force to get almost 5 yards of carry against this team. Four and a half minimum, I'm thinking. And not that San Jose State's going to regress to what they did last year, years past. This is just a tougher opponent. They don't face Air Force every year because they're in different divisions. I know they faced Army recently, San Jose. I believe they play them the past 2 years, I want to say. Recently.
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, they've played the triple option before, but with it being, they don't see it all the time, preparing for it, obviously coming off a huge win. I think Air Force will run and run pretty well, but I think it'll be the offense that'll try to keep the Spartans close in this one, but I don't think it'll be close enough.
Well, and maybe more particularly, I think that the potential matchups on the edge, if they try to lean on, for instance, Caden Remsburg trying to get the edge, and the tackles, Scott Haddock and Parker Ferguson to be able to set that edge. I think that matchup, with the outside linebackers that San Jose State has in Jesse Osuna and Rico Tolfrey and Hadari Dardon and all those guys, that seems to me like a fairly even matchup. But if they want to try and lean on Tavon Berto like they did last week against Boise State, the Broncos were able to shut that down. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on those guys in the middle, guys like Salusi Lotu and Emmanuel Talauati, everybody in that rotation, because if they want, it's a different thing trying to face 3-4. I think a more steady 3-4 than Boise, which tends to be kind of multiple. So I don't know. I mean, I think that it's going to be a really interesting matchup to see how Air Force chooses to respond to this front seven.
So what's your prediction?
Well, before I give my prediction, I'll throw SP Plus and FBI out there. So SP Plus favors Air Force by 19 points in this game. They project a 38-19 margin, and they give the Falcons an 86% chance to win. FBI also likes Air Force by 21.2. I think it'll be a little bit closer than that.
Me too. So what do you got?
I don't, it's going to sound like I don't believe in the Spartans, but I think that Air Force is going to be able to assert itself almost from the get-go. Like, even if they're able to get off to a slow start, I think that the running game will put them in a position where San Jose State is going to be playing catch-up for most of the day. So I would definitely take, what is the line on this game, by the way?
19.5.
I would definitely take San Jose State plus 19 and a half, but I'm going to take the Falcons to win this game. Let's say 30, 34 to 21.
All right. Let me type that in here. 34-21 is your score projection. I am going with Air Force 35, San Jose State 21. So kind of in the same vein as you, where it won't be a blowout, but it won't necessarily be all that close.
It seems to me like it's going to be the kind of game where even with that kind of margin of victory, it seems like it's going to be closer than the final score would indicate.
All right, now I got that game out of the way. Well, that sounds bad. Hey, did we mention it's on? We didn't mention the game time, Matt. It's Friday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 Mountain, so kind of a weird time. CBS Sports Network. So tune in, right?
Yeah. You can try Fubo TV for free
Yes, you still can do
for a
it.
week if you are so inclined.
And speaking of that, keep it for the weekend at least. NFL Red Zone's on there, I discovered. So I'm like, yes.
Oh, really?
There
That's good to know.
is a Red Zone channel on there, which is nice because I have my DirecTV is my main package, but where I live, apartment, I don't have the same packages as everybody else, and it's too expensive to upgrade. Like, I don't want to spend an extra $30 a month, like four channels, to get CBS. So I'll get my trial. I'll keep Fubo during the year, and I finally get Red Zone. So it's like, boom, double. New Mexico at Liberty is our next game. This one, another free trial game if you would like to go to ESPN Plus, because that's where you can view this one. Which is it's pretty nice. I like ESPN Plus so far, so it does a pretty good job. I've watched a couple live games. Usually works pretty good. No different than like watch ESPN or, you know what I mean, any streaming thing. New Mexico at Liberty. 7.5 point favorite. Liberty is at home. Did you see the over-under, Matt? 71.5.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Remember last year's game?
I do.
Points. You see last week's game, New Mexico State, 107 total points, I want to say.
Points, points, points.
We have the quarterback solidified, unless Joe Bailey or Bob Davie make some stupid move with Tiata, you can never say his name, Tavaka, Tavika, blah, blah, blah. Jeez, I'm the worst.
Tavaka Tuioti.
I get it backwards sometimes. I mix things up. So yeah,
That's
Tavaka-Turdy.
fair.
It's I shouldn't, but it happens. So he's their quarterback, obviously. If he's their guy, like he had a huge game last week. New Mexico played their best game in years, I would say. And we should bring up the caveat. Yes, it's New Mexico State who's very bad. However, you want to see them do good things, and they did good things. And Liberty's honestly not much better than New Mexico State, right? They're kind of that same bottom 15% of college football.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those situations, and we'll talk about it more when we talk again about the Aggies in a little bit. It's kind of hard to know what we've learned about Liberty so far, just because if you look at what they've done in their schedule so far, they had losses against both Syracuse and Louisiana Lafayette, where they weren't necessarily very competitive. But then they beat Buffalo and then basically stomped Hampton. And on some respects, they've improved from week to week, like in their passing offense in particular. Yet they have their starting quarterback in Stephen Calvert, who game by game he's gotten a little better. And for the year, he's up to about 60% completions, 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And if you remember last year's game, they still have their number one wideout in Antonio Goldie Gandon. And he has basically been a terror from day one because he's got 24 catches so far for 544 yards. And if I'm not mistaken, that latter figure leads the country.
Sounds about right. What's that, 25 yards a catch?
Yeah, and it's not a fluke either. Last week, he did have 4 catches for 181 yards against Hampton, but he's gone over 100 yards 3 times already this year, against Syracuse and against Buffalo. So he has been balling, and Stephen Calvert has been pretty good by extension. So, in the same vein that we just talked about Air Force a moment ago as being able to contain big passing plays, that has really not been a strength of the Lobos so far. They are dead last in the conference right now, actually tied for dead last as far as 20 yards completions allowed. The other team right there with them is Wyoming. So if Gandy Golden is able to have a field day against this defense, all of a sudden you're putting your offense behind the eight ball, and what do you do from there? Like how effective are they going to be, or is it going to be more like the Sam Houston State game where they were really erratic when it came to moving the ball?
That's true as well, because you would think with the level of competition, they should be able to move the ball, be fine in those points. This could be like a shootout again. But I'm leaning toward maybe that's the case because they have their starting quarterback, 355 yards. They ran the ball well last week. They passed the receiving, caught the ball. Last week was like their best game in a long time. And it's good to see them bounce back after that Notre Dame loss where they just got crushed against a much better team. I think their offense could have a similar impact in this game. I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll maybe have a, not a repeat performance, but could put up at least 35 points in this game. Just because of history, what they've done this year, what Liberty's done, kind of a, and they also got a, how much does it matter that Joe Daly's coaching his old team as the OC for the Lobos now?
I mean, I don't think it's going to matter that much. I think what's maybe more important, and I don't know how we didn't leave with this either, Bob Davies back.
Good. Bob Davies back. And so are we going to have two coaches at 100%? Is Hugh Freeze going to be on the sideline if officially?
I have no idea. I'm just kind of assuming he's going to break out a beanbag or something like
It's a
that.
figured. I heard somebody like, yeah, go coach on a Segway. I don't know. Do something. He's done a million different things. No, it's good to have Bob Davie back. However, did you happen to see, I'm going to steer away from football for a minute. Did you see his comments about the marketing team?
I did not.
Sort of puts blame on the football team's lack of success on them or lack of fans in the stadium on the marketing team instead of, not winning. That's typical Bob Davie, right? So there's also, did we mention Lilly's out for the year?
Yes. Oh, wait, actually, we did not mention that. I was just about to.
I just happen to see it now. But yeah, he's out for the year, which could be an issue catching the ball.
Possibly.
Possibly. He's been Elijah Lilly, probably was he expected to probably be the number one receiver?
He's in the mix at
Yeah,
least.
he's been there. So there's a couple things I wanted to bring up. So let's get to the prediction here because this game is going to be like a slog fest, I think, but it could be a fun one. Like I think it could be like a messy game with lots of points and be just kind of think of a step below that Arizona Hawaii game.
That sounds about right.
So if it's about 25% of that, it's a good game to tune into on ESPN Plus there. So I will go. Well, actually, you go first. I don't have my projections up here real quick. What does like FEI and stuff say about this matchup?
All right, so SP Plus favors Liberty by 18.7.
18?
Yeah.
Cool.
42 to 24 projected score with an 86% win probability.
Wow.
That surprises me.
Yeah.
FEI also favors Liberty, but not quite as much. They have them favored by 11.
What do you say?
What did you say the line was? 7.5?
Yeah.
See, I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is, one, can they stop Gandy Golden? And two, are they going to be able to protect Tavaka Tuioti? Because let's not forget, and this is something I wanted to mention before we gave the prediction, Liberty's got at least one or two defensive playmakers in a way that New Mexico State really did not. For instance, they have, you know, their defensive end, Jesse Lemonnier, who already has 4.5 sacks this year. So he's been playing really well. And they've got at least a couple of other guys in Seneca Espinoza Jr. and Jade Sanders, who, you know, they also have sacks. So they've been able to create some plays up front. And that's something that New Mexico has been pretty solid against so far. Like, they haven't really given up that many sacks. So, you know, it's a matter of determining whether or not they've actually been really challenged. Actually, to clarify, they haven't given up any sacks whatsoever this year.
There you go.
Did you know that?
I did not know. That's a pretty good stat.
That's the throwbows for you.
That's right. I guess so. Yeah. Is it going to keep going?
Possibly. You know what? It's been a while since I've done a stupid upset pick.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to take New Mexico to win this game.
Oh, New Mexico. All right.
They're going to have to score a lot of points to do it, but I'm going to say Lobos 42, Liberty 38.
Liberty 38. All right, so just kind of looking at who's picked in our group, most people are picking Liberty to win, like straight up. Everybody except for you, apparently. So you want to change
your pick? I wonder if everybody knows something I don't.
Or you know something they don't know. I am going with New Mexico to cover 40-35 for Liberty, though. A close one.
All right, then.
So I think it'll be a close game. You know, it's not going to be close. The next game we're talking about CSU at Utah State. CBS Sports Network. I'll get the pertinent info out of the way. 5:30 local time there, 4:30 Pacific. Utah State's it changed just now. 24-point favorite. They're going to cover by more than that.
What did the line open at?
I think 22 is still pretty high. I'll look at that while you discuss the game real quick. I'll pull the opening line up here.
I mean, Mike Bobo just really can't catch a break, can he?
We got to have a good team, though, right?
And it's really kind of a shame because, you know, as we talked about in last week's preview, the offense has been really good for the most part. You know, they did have some turnover issues at certain points in the first few weeks, but this is still an offense that, at least by, you know, just by scoring, I think they're number one in the conference. The problem is that the defense is giving up over 40 points a game. They're actually third in the conference in scoring offense, by the way, 34.5 points per game. So they've been pretty strong on that side of the ball, and Patrick O'Brien looked like, at least for 1 week, that he wasn't going to be that much of a drop-off, if at all.
Or better.
From what Colin Hill was going to be able to do, or at least from what we thought he was going to be able to do. So to be down two of your primary playmakers in a game like this, you know, I think back to last year's game where it ended up being a lot closer than anybody expected. And Colorado State was literally the length of a toe or two from winning that game last year.
Questionable call at the end of that one.
But man, I don't know if it's going to play out quite the same way.
It opened as a 22-point favorite. Now it's 24.
Yeah.
You mentioned those two players lost. You did specifically mention one of those players is Marvin Kinsey.
That's true. Yeah.
And Warren Jackson. It's just likely to miss the Utah State game. So there's a chance, but if they say they're likely to miss the game, and this is on Tuesday, I want to say, when this came out, maybe Monday afternoon, the 23rd, was that Tuesday?
That would be Monday.
Okay, so he says Monday they're likely going to miss the game. You don't tape your hand that early if it's a bad injury. You know what I mean? Like, well, we'll see throughout the week how they go. If he says they're probably missing, and you're saying that Monday at noon, they're missing the game. And the way Kinsey has been running, shown, like we mentioned, vast strides of improvement, playing well. O'Brien can't throw unless Nate Craig Myers has a huge game and steps up for, because he played well last week in his opener versus the Rams after being eligible. I don't,
and
that's the only thing that could be okay thing. In a passing game. The passing game might be nearly okay because Nate Craig Myers, as I said, back during summer, is a guy to watch. And if he's as good as Warren Jackson or close, that might be their saving grace to keep it close.
That's the thing. I mean, it's hard when you lose significant playmakers like that, but it's not as though all of a sudden we expect the Rams to be punchless or anything like that. It's just going to come down to, can those other components of the offense step up and replace that production? You know, so I think about like the tight end tandem of Cameron Butler or Trey McBride, for instance. Like McBride has 13 catches so far, which is third best on the team. So it's not like he hasn't contributed, but Cameron Butler only has 7 catches for 66 yards in the early going. Maybe they get him a little bit into the fold. And we saw last week that Craig Myers had a pretty positive impact, and he was this close to, you know, nearly stealing a win for the Rams against Toledo last
week.
Twice. So in the same way that we talked about with Boise right at the beginning of this podcast, it's not like it's a totally damaging prospect to be without both Jackson and Kinsey. Yeah, because they still have Dont'a Wright, and he has been the team's leading receiver so far. Mm-hmm. It's just they're going to need more from those role players. Craig Myers is going to have to step up. McBride and Butler are going to have to step up. EJ Scott's going to have to step up if they want to survive this game against Utah State.
I think the running game has to step up more than the receiving game, just what they've been doing. I think the receiving game's fine with Craig Myers. It might take a small step back, but the running game, what Kinsey's been doing the past 2 weeks, all of his touchdowns, what, 70% of his yardage in those two games. That's a big
that
loss.
Is kind of the big if, you're right. And because he has that explosive ability, but I think it is worth keeping in mind too that Marcus McElroy and Jalen Thomas, who have, you know, are second and third on the team in attempts so far. McElroy is still averaging over 5 yards carry.
It's good.
And Jalen Thomas is at 4.2, which is fine. So, but there's still obviously going to be a drop off. So I think the name of the game is just efficiency. Is, you know, because if they're going to miss that same level of explosiveness from the running game, just being able to stay on the field and move the chains is going to be extremely important for them.
Exactly. And as for Utah State side, we haven't mentioned them too much because we probably both are going to predict them to win. The biggest thing I shall also go to mention in recap is Jalen Warren is clearly the number one running back now.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gets 15 plus carries, he's, like I mentioned, newcomer of the year or whatever. We'll look into that. We'll make him our own newcomer of the year possibly, if that's the case. Or Craig Myers, if he does quite well and finishes the year really strong. But they have a great running game. Like, there's no real issues on the Utah State team that concerns me against Colorado State. Because Colorado State's defense, as we know, Matt, is terrible. They're behind bad. And if you give time for Warren to get carries, you have Jordan Love throwing to, like, Sosie Mariner, somebody on the outside catching the ball. Like, I don't see how, like, this might be almost Stony Brook bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Colorado State's going to try to steal this game, it's going to start up front. And I say that because they've shown at least like a tiny bit of ability, and I'm thinking mostly about the Western Illinois game, of being able to defend the run. And I think that's what Utah State's going to want to do first and foremost, is just, you know, hammer them right up the gut and use that to really set the tempo and then start hitting them down the field or on the edges, you know, going north and south. And so I think it is worth noting that, you know, someone like Ellison Hubbard, for instance, who we haven't really talked about in the early going, but he's already at 4.5 tackles and he's shown some ability to kind of to be disruptive on the inside. The problem is that nobody else on that interior has really been able to show the same kind of ability. You know, Jan Philip Bombeck and Toby McBride and Cameron Carter all have 3 tackles for loss, but most of those guys have played on the outside. But I think, you know, winning the battle on the interior is going to be another thing that's really important. It's just, you know, based on what I've seen so far from the Rams, I kind of doubt their ability to do that.
All right. So for this particular game, as we mentioned, it's a staggering 24-point favorite for Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
72.5 over under. So I guess if you play like daily fantasy, pick up your Aggies if you're available, find out where they can be.
We'll pick up your Rams too, especially if they're playing from behind. Get those sweet, sweet garbage time stats.
Exactly. You want to get the receivers, yeah, quarterback. Yeah, there's plenty of opportunity going around. Running game I may stick away from if you want a big bang for your buck. But FPI has Utah State as a quite nice 89.8% chance to win, which seems about right. Their final scores here, Matt. Team rankings 47-9 to 23.5.
Yikes.
Number Fire even worse, 56 to 20.
Well, SP Plus isn't really much better. They do they do favor Utah State by 21.
So they cover
with a projected score of 43 to 23 and an 89% win probability. And then FEI also favors the Aggies, and that is by 24.7 points.
All right, my prediction, 45-17 Utah State.
I think the Rams are going to be going to be able to hang around for a little while, but I don't expect them to win this game.
They can cover that spread?
I think they can cover the spread.
You are one of two people to pick that.
Or three. I'm going to say Utah State 41, Colorado State 21.
Okay, it's still well below or 20. That's still 10 points below the cover or the over under of 70 something. Jeez. There's no way, no way that game's going to get to 73 points, right?
I wouldn't think so.
And it'd be the Rams having to score some points late, like he's mentioned, garbage time. Because I don't know if Utah State can score. No, we can, but see them do that. But with it being a blowout, I think for me to reach that, to be confident, Utah State would need to get to 50, and I'm not sure if they'll quite get to 50.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, next game, Fresno State at New Mexico State. This game is on, what, Flow TV or something? I don't know what channel it's on. Is it pay-per-view, right, again?
Flow Sports? It's Flow TV.
No free trials, as I came across last week. So, guess it's radio for you, Matt, or somebody gives you a Flow Sports password. I don't know how that works.
I'll probably just be watching the Colorado State-Utah State game.
That's probably a better idea, too, half an hour earlier. 5 o'clock Pacific, 18-point line favored, for Fresno State there on the road, looking for their first FBS victory of the year. They won last week, as we mentioned. Like, we've talked about New Mexico State so many times. Like, Matt, do you have any reason to believe the Fresno State Bulldogs should stumble in this game?
No.
What do you want to see good do well, then? What do you want to see them achieve in this final non-conference game?
Well, one of the things that we talked about a little bit in last week's recap is just special teams have been kind of a mess in some respects. So, if the Aggies, for whatever reason, are able to bog down the offense in the red zone, I just want to see them convert some field goals, because that was really kind of a weakness of theirs for most of last year. And at least so far in 2019, they haven't really been much better. Like Cesar Silva, who claimed the job, is only 5 of 9 on the season. I don't think he's in any danger of losing the job per se. Especially since, as we mentioned in the recap, that Asa Fuller also missed an extra point last week.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I want to see. The other thing I want to see is just, clean up the turnovers for once. Because that was one of those things where they had no problem really moving the ball against Sacramento State last week. But they continually shot themselves in the foot, and that was why the score ended up being a little bit closer than it probably should have been. And then, other than that, I just kind of want to see them keep improving on third downs, which was a step in the right direction that they had last week on both sides of the ball. On offense, they were 50%, which was way up from what they'd been able to do against both USC and Minnesota. And they held the Hornets to 28% on defense. So I think as long as they can continue trending in the same direction that they did in a lot of respects last week against Sacramento State, they should win this game going away.
Going away. So you mean they should win by more than 18 points?
I think so.
I agree with you. I just want to see them beat an FBS team. They've played well against USC, Minnesota. Sacramento State stumbled a bit, but there's not much to see. I want to see Jorge Reyna throw the ball well, running game go well, and have nobody get hurt again because injuries suck.
And you know what else I want to see? I want to see the defense clean up the big plays through the passing game.
Yeah, take care of business.
Because that's something that New Mexico State just really does not do well. And again, in a lot of respects, they trended in the right direction last week against Sacramento State by really holding down Kevin Thompson. But, they still gave up a few big plays when they probably should not have. And so that's just one of those little things that I want to see a little bit more of.
All right, so what does FEI and all that stuff say?
SP Plus favors the Bulldogs by 21.1. With a projected final score of 41 to 19 and a win probability of 89%. And FEI also favors Fresno State by 19.7.
What's your projection then? What do you got?
I'll lay the points.
Okay.
Fresno State 42, New Mexico 17.
17, all right. My prediction, similar to you, 35-10, Fresno State. This should be a dominant defensive effort, and I'm guessing points will come late in the game when Jeff Tedford starts rotating into backups.
And nobody will be able to watch it.
Yeah, so it doesn't really happen. Lame, I know. All right, Wyoming host UNLV, ESPNU. So a lot of people could see this one, Matt.
That's true.
6 p.m. Mountain Time. Wyoming's a decently 9.5-point favorite team. So I was looking at the Las Vegas Sun today. They have a headline.
Oh, were you doing that too?
Did you like the headline?
No, I didn't actually.
Oh. No, I mean, but
I was going to say yes, I did, and then I realized, no, wait, I don't actually like that.
No, I'm just saying, it's not. If you're a Rebel fan, this is not what you want to see. What we're getting at. Headline: UNLV football could come out throwing at Wyoming. Do you really want to try that?
Why?
When you have, okay, Coach Sanchez. Here's what he says. I'll just read directly from here. What he has. Let me make sure I have the right quote here. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. Okay, bland, vanilla, whatever. They're a team that's very stingy against the run. We run the ball really well. So I'm going to stop there. Wouldn't that mean you'd want to challenge your team to go against their strength since you think you're also really good? Continuing, they give up a lot of yards passing. We've got to find our way passing the ball a little bit better. That quote gives me zero confidence in this coach. Right?
Well, then you know what you do? You use the run to set up play action.
Yeah, I've heard of
and
that.
And you coach. Get guys like Charles Williams and Tylee Collins in the flat. Yeah. And you give them space to be able to run after the catch. You don't throw deep.
No. You may try that throughout the game, but you have, like you mentioned, Charles Williams, probably going to be an NFL draft pick this upcoming year. He's really
good. Charles Williams is the best running back in the conference right now. And he hasn't even had 20 carries in a game so far this year.
Better than
what
Talatua?
Are they doing?
You're about right. Him and Talatua, right? Those are the top two.
Well, I mean, we just talked to Marvin Kinsey. He's definitely played his way into that conversation.
Sure, the
as
past
well.
Two games, yes. But you're right. Like
it's
he's
just like it. I don't understand it.
He's probably as good as anybody in the Pac-12. Like if you look at guys like Zach Moss at Utah, really good. He's probably in that same range, but he's more powerful. Charles Williams is. You have like Benjamin at Arizona State. He's probably up there with those guys. They're really good. He is. Give him the ball. Make Wyoming adjust to you. You're falling into the trap. Oh. They have a good rush defense. I guess we'll try to pass. They give up yards. Let's attack their weakness with our weakness. No, do what you said, Matt. Run play action. Move the pocket around. Do different things where they're going to attack. Say they're going to attack the run against you, and it may open something up. Like if they're all doing a run blitz and they fall, and not that they'll fall off the play action, but they bring in 6-7 guys or whatever they do to stop the run, and Rodgers rolls out and fires somebody across the middle because they bring 7 guys, that middle of the field's wide open. Or they send guys deep and have a tight end going short, like underneath, like you mentioned, on the flat on the side. Like send guys deep on a play action, you have the whole middle of the field open. You don't need to start out throwing the ball. And we've seen when Armani Rodgers throws, does the team do well?
No, they do not.
They do not. So why not start to run and then build up to the pass?
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay, go for it.
Obviously, the stats kind of speak in favor in Wyoming's favor as far as being able to defend the run, because in some respects, the Cowboys haven't really faced a lot of slouches in the running game, but they did shut down Larry Roundtree mm-hmm. from Missouri. They shut down a pretty capable Tulsa running game. And Idaho had a pretty productive duo of running backs that they were able to shut down as well. So, I mean, I guess I can understand the logic. And then you also have to consider that the Cowboys also have lost C.J. Colden for the year with injury. And so they're starting a sophomore, Azizi Hearn. He's atop the depth chart opposite of Tyler Hall. Antonio Hole is back with the team, I believe, at this point.
Yes.
But you have Elijah Halliburton, who's shown a capacity to play up in the box. He's been, I think he's near the top, if not at the top of the conference as far as defensive backs and tackles for loss and things like that. So Wyoming has shown itself to be extremely effective defending the run, and yeah, I guess I can understand the logic, but at the same time, again, you just go back to the point that UNLV has shown no ability in the last, I don't know, 16 months to do so consistently, at least not with Rodgers under center.
Do I know another stat? Our good buddy Tyler Bischoff had a good one. So, or this is not a deep, it's not just bashing Rodgers here. So, this is a stat where his attempts of hit attempts when targeting a receiver more than 10 yards downfield, he's 23-77 in his career. And that's over two years starting. That's what, a third? Less than a third?
That's bad is what it is.
Yeah, and that's only 10-yard pass or more. It's not like it's like a 20-yard pass or a deep pass or something where those are less likely of outcome. That's 29.8% completion rate of yard, basically air yardage 10 yards or more. So basically, it's third and 10, you're screwed. Second and you pass. Second and 10, you're not getting the first down. He's only completed 53% of his passes all year. And so for the life of me, why would Sanchez come out and say we're going to throw the ball?
As a reason to be victorious. Unless he's trying to play head games and nobody believes him.
I believe he's stupid if that's the case. It's like a dumb comment to make. It's like, what's the point? Like, I understand his thinking. Like, there could be success had again in the passing game. Like, I'm not saying don't try it. But basically comes out and saying, oh, man, I guess we'll have to pass the ball well because they give up a lot of yardage.
Well, yeah, and you want to know another reason why it might be a bad idea?
Antonio Holmes back?
Well, not only that, but just as a team, the Cowboys only have 3 interceptions this year. But they are number 1 in the conference in passes broken up. And we have already seen multiple instances this year where, you know, an errant throw or a tip drill interception has really enabled UNLV to shoot themselves in the foot. So it's one of those instances where if for 1 week Wyoming can turn some of those opportunities that they've created for themselves into more turnovers, now all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball and you can't play to your strengths when you want to.
Yeah. The only concern I have with this game too, like to flip the other side, Shawn Chambers is the worst quarterback of the two by far. He can't throw the ball very well. They may bring in Tyler Vanderwall, but he looked awful last week. Was he 1 of 6, I think, when he came in for relief?
It's really kind of strange that to this point in the season, they have basically been kind of the exact same quarterback.
Yeah.
In a lot of respects.
It's not good.
Not good throwing the ball. I'll say that.
Hey, he wasn't good running last week, though, either.
Well, Chambers had more than 80 yards last week.
Oh, I thought he hit about 60. My bad.
Yeah. So I mean they both still have that ability, and Chambers is actually number they're actually and maybe it's not a surprise, but they're 1 and 2 as far as yards per game among Mountain West quarterbacks so far on the ground. You know, Chambers without adjusting for sacks is at 279 yards and over 6 yards per carry, and Rodgers hasn't run quite as much and he's only at 4.17, That's another one of those things that Wyoming hasn't really been challenged with so far this year because nobody that they faced has had a quarterback with quite the same running ability as Rodgers. So I almost wonder if that's a wrinkle that they could incorporate somehow.
You would think. Also, their running back health is an issue too. They're not healthy there, Wyoming. And so,
because Trey Smith is out for what, 4 to 6 weeks?
Something like that for a bit. The 9.5 seems a bit big. I'm looking at what my pick was really quick. I might change mine after thinking about those things because I originally had Wyoming winning pretty big. Actually, I think this game could be somewhat close because if Wyoming, because here's the thing. I could see this game. Remember the Colorado State game with the snow game with Josh Allen? Mm-hmm. They won like, what, 13-7? Whatever it was, snowy field. He went down and drove and got the game-winning touchdown. I think he ran it in or something.
Yeah.
I'm thinking this could be a low-scoring game like that because Wyoming's offense isn't very good. If they can't run the ball very well, and if they only rely on their quarterback to run, that's not really an offensive mindset. If the Rebels try to throw the ball more often than not, Wyoming defense will just snuff it out. Even if they're to be balanced, Charles Williams getting 100 yards is going to be very difficult, no matter how good he is against his defense. And so it might come down to, we've seen Wyoming, maybe they'll get those interceptions down instead of the tips or pass breakups. Logan Wilson seemingly has like a pick six or some return touchdown almost every year. A couple defenders have that. I'm not sure as well. I mean, offense will get the win. It'll come down to their defense stopping them. And I think it's going to be like a low scoring game.
So do you need the projections first before you make a decision?
Yeah, I'm making a little change on the fly here. So give me what you got for SP Plus and FEI.
All right, SP Plus likes Wyoming by 9.7,
Okay.
and they do project a 31 to 21 score, which is kind of interesting. They give the Cowboys a 71% win probability. And FEI also likes the Cowboys by 12.4.
I just made a quick change. I'm going Wyoming 20, UNLV 13, which means UNLV would cover that 9 points, 9.5 points.
I don't think UNLV is going to cover 9.5.
I just don't think Wyoming can score enough. That's the problem.
I think that they'll be able to put the I think they'll be able to put the clamps on UNLV, especially if the Rebels go and actually do what they say they want to do in this game.
Sure, but it can stumble into 13 points, right?
I'm going to say Wyoming 27, UNLV 13.
Okay, so still a low-scoring game, essentially. Nothing outlandish.
Good enough to cover.
Exactly. All right, so that's it's a kind of mixed bag of who covers. Most people are picking Wyoming to win, but to cover, it's kind of a switching, not switching, but a kind of here and there. All right, last game here. To wrap this up. Hawaii at Nevada. Hawaii is a 2.5 point underdog on the road, so Nevada is clearly the favorite, as I say that. Nevada, as a quarterback, they're not. We thought this could be a week of a quarterback issue because they didn't have to. Well, sort of. There's injury to Celino, so they decided to kind of go to like Malik Reed and Carson Strong to see what's going on. Just partly because let's see what we got when we're playing a team we should win. But they and also, oh, sorry, I'm bouncing around a quarterback. You see who's moving back to quarterback?
Cayman Curtin.
Cayman Curtin, who nicknamed to way too early the Grand Cayman. When Jay Norvell was doing all sorts of crazy things, he moved from safety back to quarterback. But they are going back to their starting quarterback, Christian Solano. Or no, sorry, no. I apologize. Why am I reading this name wrong here? Carson Strong. I was looking at the some other thing on some website here. So they go back to the half. So the injury must not have been that significant, Matt. But why would they bring Kamen to quarterback if that injury wasn't an issue?
Well, because you can never have enough depth there.
Are they like Malik Henry at all?
I mean, I think Malik Henry showed fine.
Two of two,
I think
yeah.
it's probably just a precaution.
I guess. It just seems kind of odd midway through the year that one quarterback gets hurt. Let's bring back a guy who hasn't played quarterback in over a year. I don't know. Here's the thing about this game. We know what Hawaii can do. We know what Nevada can do. Are we going to get a wild Hawaii-Nevada game just because of this? I think it all depends on Cole McDonald, how accurate he is in this game. Is it going to be a wild game or not?
That's true, and that seems like the kind of thing that you can't really predict from week to week.
He got false confidence last week with three touchdowns and one pick, but he's playing Central Arkansas. You get nothing from that. You know what I mean? It's like you're not playing FBS team, a decent team, playing Nevada team is 3-1, both 3-1. This is a pretty big game in the West Division. I'm wondering how quickly he could get pulled if he has like two picks in the first, say, five possessions.
See, what I'm wondering most about is this the game where Tua Taua finally has the breakout?
It'd be one I think that could happen.
Because, I mean, he's been kind of hit or miss in the early going. Yeah, and he's averaging 4.5 yards per carry, which is fine. But he hasn't had a 100-yard game yet this season. He doesn't have more than 16 attempts. And it's not like they haven't faced defenses that should be able to create those kinds of opportunities, especially last week against UTEP, for instance. He only had 10 carries for 43 yards, even though he had a touchdown and things like that. So I see another opportunity for Nevada to really assert themselves with their ground game, especially if they want to try and protect Carson Strong, who's been a little bit erratic throwing the football here and there. Because at the moment, Hawaii is giving up over 6 yards per play on the ground, and they've already given up 10 touchdowns. So I think that if Nevada can assert themselves up front, like the offensive line play for the Wolfpack has been a little bit shaky so far, but against a Hawaii front that really hasn't offered much resistance to just about anyone so far this year, and maybe some of that is an effect of having played, for instance, JJ Taylor and Khalil Tate from Arizona and Jamar Jefferson and things like that. But Tua Taua, if he wants to prove that he is close to that bunch of runners, it's going to start this week. And I think that his production is going to be really key to Nevada winning this game.
I think so as well because he wants to have that type of game. The over under in this game, it's sitting at what, 62.5? 64.5. I think one thing interesting about Hawaii, well, I guess I don't want to say anything about last week's. He played Central Arkansas. I was going to say something about the receivers because they had new guys step up, but when you're playing that FCS team, it's fine. I think Hawaii's going to throw the ball well and move the ball in the air. I just don't trust Cole McDonald to not screw up at some point. And that's the thing. Like, he can do it. Like, he'll have maybe 350 yards and three touchdowns, but two picks or a wild errant throw to not either get a pick off or a don't complete a fourth and three when Rolovich decides to go for it, like he seemingly does almost every other fourth down attempt he gets. This game's kind of hard to predict because if Cole McDonald were more steady, whether it's we know he's going to be good or maybe he's not that good, I'm leaning toward him being not that good in the sense that he turns the ball over, decision making is questionable. I'm still picking Hawaii to win, but it's going to be super close and probably one of the more exciting games of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think to expand upon your point, one thing that I'm really watching out for is, you know, Hawaii has been pretty good in pass protection. You know, they throw the ball a lot. I don't have the exact number of pass attempts in front of me, but they've only given up 6 sacks so far this year, which when you consider how much they lean on that element of the game is pretty good. But Nevada's been a little better than expected up front as far as being able to create pressure on the quarterback because they have the pair of Dom Peterson and Tristan Nichols, who to this point they have 5.5 sacks between them. So if those guys can create disruptions, if they can force McDonald, you know, maybe they force him off the spot and throw him on the run. You know, we've seen in the past that's where he may be more prone to errors, or, you know, maybe they get to him as he's getting into his windup or something like that, because relative to a lot of other quarterbacks in the conference, it does take him like a split second longer to kind of get rid of the football. You know, maybe that's the kind of thing where if they're right there, they can create a turnover or something like that. So if Hawaii can prevent that, that'll be a point in their favor. But that's something else to keep an eye on in this game.
So what does the projection say?
So SP Plus likes Hawaii. They favor them only by 1.9, though. You know, they have a 33-31 projected final score with a 54% win probability for the Warriors. FEI, though, does like Nevada. And they favor the Wolfpack by 5.8. So there's some difference of opinion in the advanced metrics.
What do you say?
I think Nevada is going to be able to hold serve at home because I think that they have playmakers that, if they can step up, you know, they can punch some serious holes in some of the weaknesses that Nevada has shown that Hawaii has shown they still have. So I would take Nevada to win. It's going to be pretty close, though, and it's definitely going to be entertaining. I'm going to say, you know what, let's just go for it, 45-42. It's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be super fun.
I'm going to change my pick because I've been burned by Hawaii too many times already. I did have Hawaii 33, Nevada 30. I'm just going to flip that around. Nevada 33, Hawaii 30. Because, right, like,
there you go.
Hawaii, it's like, it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a close game. I could see easily either team winning. But Hawaii's kind of like, they've broken through a little bit this year. Like, the Oregon State game was pretty bad, missing all those field goals, getting down, not scoring. Arizona game, all the interceptions. Defense bailed them out. But I think the way Nevada's already played, like, when they played Missouri, when they play these other teams this year, I just think they're being at home. And also, like, you're right with Tala, because they have a pretty big game. And so I'm picking a field goal victory for a Nevada Wolfpack, which means I have them covering as well. It looks like there's only three people that are picking Nevada to win. Four people, sorry. Out of like 10 on our staff. So we're the outlier, I guess, in that one. So
there you go.
Pick with what you want, right?
Exactly.
All right. Anything else we'd add? Because that's our games of the week. And of course, we still go like an hour.
I think we're all set.
All right, that's it for the show today. Check us out, MWR.com. We'll have previews, projections. We got some bye week stuff for Boise State going on right now. Check us out, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. You know what to do. Mountain West Wire, find us where we're at. And we'll be back sometime Sunday. And hopefully, every team that you root for is victorious.